His mouth parted from Alex's erect flesh. Her hand kept stroking. Taylor's hand joined Lorelai's. He looked on in awe as the two kissed for a long and exciting moment, and then turned their attention back to him. As Taylor began trailing test kisses along his cock, Lorelai shifted to run her fingers through Taylor's brown hair. "For Alex," Lorelai suggested. "The eyes mean a great deal here."
"Gotcha,"
Taylor nodded eagerly. Her kisses became longer and hungrier, until finally they came to the head of his shaft. Her eyes stayed locked with his all the while. Taylor went down on Alex in slow, tentative bobs. She let out a grunt of appreciation.
"Wow," she grinned. "This actually feels good."
Alex flashed a surprised and questioning look at Lorelai. But the succubus answered only with a serene smile. She trailed her nails up and down Taylor's shoulders and back, in light, arousing caresses.
"It's like magic, isn't it?"
she asked, winking at Alex. He caught the loaded nature of her question but didn't reply. Her calm, controlled expression crumbled under the assault of sheer pleasure. Her lips fell open and quivered. Her eyes fluttered in time with the motions of Taylor's head. He understood then just how deep her connection to his pleasures ran. Her touch at Taylor's back grew more intimate. She unhooked Taylor's bra, slipping her hands under the fabric as it came loose. The succubus aided Taylor in slipping it off, then cast it aside next to Alex, with a glance as if to present him with a trophy. Lorelai's hands swept around Taylor's front, softly cupping and teasing her breasts. Taylor had never been particularly sensitive there before, but Lorelai's touch changed that. With everyone's head swimming, it was Lorelai who directed things.
"As much as we're all enjoying this," she said, "perhaps we might adjourn to the bed."
Taylor's eyebrows rose quizzically at Alex, as her mouth was still quite busy. After a moment or two, Alex nodded in breathless agreement. Taylor rose, grinning at the effect she had on him. Lorelai stood with her, remaining mere inches behind her, and still mapping out Taylor's body by touch. Still seated, Alex reached for Taylor's hips, to gently keep her from going anywhere. His eyes stayed on hers as his fingers slipped into her panties at the hips, pulling them down. He said nothing as she stepped out of them. With their gaze still locked, Alex leaned forward and kissed the wet lips between her legs. Taylor cried out in pleasure immediately. Her head fell back against Lorelai's shoulders, and within moments of Alex's indulgence, the succubus was practically holding Taylor up in her embrace. Lorelai continued her seduction, devouring Taylor's neck with kisses as her hands roamed across Taylor's beautiful young body. Taylor's hands went around Alex's head, pulling him close as his kiss eventually shifted from spreading across her sex to light, steady circles around her clit. Before long, the young woman melted down completely into Lorelai's arms, quivering under the affection that surrounded her. Lorelai held her close as Alex rose. He stepped into their embrace, waiting patiently with Lorelai as Taylor calmed down.
"There'll be a lot of that," he said. "If you like."
Taylor's only answer was a deep, passionate kiss. She then twisted around, pulling Lorelai into a similar kiss. Taylor breathed,
"I want you both so much."
She looked back at Alex, her trepidation a distant memory, and her excitement only building even after orgasm.
"And I want to taste you."
He took her hand and led her to the bed, with Lorelai following close behind. As Alex lay on the bed, propped up a bit by the pillows at its head, Taylor slipped into a comfortable spot between his legs. It surprised him somewhat when she resumed her previous task with hardly a pause. He certainly didn't object. She hadn't considered what role Lorelai would play in this until she felt herself guided to her knees with her legs parted. A mind-splitting, wonderful tongue caressed Taylor's labia, parting them and teasing her inner flesh with inevitable rapture. Taylor let out a loud, uncontrolled whimper while she continued sucking on Alex's cock. She gave up any attempt at holding his gaze.
Her eyes closed as she focused on her own intimate task, as if to help her hold on against the blissful assault between her legs. It didn't do much good. Taylor couldn't help but come for Lorelai's experienced tongue. Alex stroked her hair, whispering to her how beautiful she was as her body shuddered and her mouth sucked even harder on his flesh. When her spasms finally subsided, Taylor threw all the resultant energy into what she was doing. Lorelai continued licking and kissing her, but Taylor could ride that now, deriving pleasure from it while giving to another. She began to hear Alex breathe and groan the way she had, until finally, she felt him tense up. She accepted the result without hesitation or displeasure. As Lorelai said, it was like magic. When they parted, Alex gestured for them both to come close. He shifted to kiss Taylor, then Lorelai. Taylor soon found herself on her back between them.
"I can't believe this is happening," Taylor murmured.
"I know saying that is totally cliche, but it's true." Alex just grinned. "I want you," he said simply.
"I'm not going anywhere. Soon as you're ready."
"He's ready now," said the seductress, now trailing kisses across her breasts. Taylor glanced down as Alex got to his knees, shifting around.
"How can you already be up for more?" she murmured.
"Magic," he grinned, sliding her legs apart for himself. "He's very talented," Lorelai winked. As he caressed her lips with the head of his cock, Alex asked, "How long can you stay?"
"Monday morning. You can both have me as much as you want till then."
It was as much a confession as an invitation. She didn't see how she could ever muster the willpower to deny either partner. The thought was only reinforced as Alex pushed inside her. Taylor moaned out loud, reaching up with one hand to take his, while her other arm was draped around Lorelai. He started slow and stayed that way for a long while, which suited her just fine. He took some getting used to, but even that was a joy. There was also the spectacular woman looming over Taylor, on her hands and knees, indulging her with all sorts of affection.
"He's not leaving you out, is he?" Taylor asked her softly.
"No," Lorelai murmured slowly. It was then that Taylor could see Lorelai's closed eyes and satisfied smile. "We've made love all day and last night," she explained. Her voice carried the tremble of a woman enduring a great deal of gratification. "He has longed for you. I find that he has excellent taste. But no, my love does not ignore me at all." Taylor then realized what Alex must be doing with his free hand. Lorelai confirmed it with a low moan and the slow bucking of her hips against Alex's touch. The sensation of constant penetration was overwhelming. Between long, luxurious kisses from Lorelai, Taylor looked up at him to drink in the sight of his face as he enjoyed her. The only truly coherent thought that she could hold while he and his girlfriend made love to her was that this had been a very good decision. The suite was quiet and dark. All the sounds of passionate, generous lovemaking between three people had been reduced to the soft coming together of two. Lorelai settled down on top of Alex with a long and loving kiss, enjoying the feeling of him inside her. Alex looked to his left. Taylor lay sound asleep with a slight smile on her lips. "She will not awaken without a little encouragement," whispered the succubus. "You will need to sleep too, but I wanted you to myself first." "Thank you for this," Alex said. "Oh, it wasn't for you alone," Lorelai grinned. Her skin had taken on a decidedly red tone once Taylor drifted off. Small, curved horns jutted out from just below her hairline. He smiled broadly at the sight. He had feared they would be large and unattractive, but as it turned out, they only enhanced her image of wicked beauty. As with her tail, he doubted he'd see much of them anyway. Lorelai made no mention of it. "She came looking for you," the succubus noted. "Because you told me to confirm I'd be there in a way that she'd see it. And you arranged this tonight." And tomorrow, she grinned promisingly. And tomorrow night. She is hungry. This is by no means over.
So, like I said, thank you.
You're welcome. She continued to grind against him. I do not expect she will want a formal relationship or a commitment, she cautioned. She's no one's harem girl. But I suggested she had certain freedoms with you. I hope I have gauged your feelings accurately.
Yeah, Alex nodded. I'll have to talk to her.
I will find some time to leave you two alone,
Lorelei murmured. Gasps and soft whimpers punctuated her words.
Intimacy requires some privacy.
I want to tell her everything, Lorelei, he said. The guys know. She deserves to know, too.
Lorelei nodded. Alex added,
she'll probably freak out, though.
I can help with that,
Lorelei offered. No brainwashing. Just an allaying of fears until she hears everything.
You like her, too, don't you?
A naughty smile crept across his lover's face.
Yes, I would enjoy having her to myself a little, if you would approve. I swear to take good care of her.
How am I ever supposed to deny you?
Wise man, Lorelei whispered into his mouth as her kiss descended upon him. Chapter 14 Loyalties. The Ambrose gang ruled the county for 2 years, right up until the night that the piano player at the Royale wanted to die. Nobody wanted to face down 14 hardened gunmen, especially ones with hands as swift and steady as the Ambrose boys themselves. They commanded the sort of respect that comes from abject fear. They had money, power, and the freedom to rape, rob, and murder with impunity. Papa Ambrose even seemed to have a high placement in the coming state government, all sewn up with bribes put in all the right pockets. They had it all. The only mistake came when Danny and Whitney Ambrose and Oscar Jameson decided on a night of drinking, whoring, and playing cards.
Why the hell ain't he playing?
Danny asked. He sat at the poker table with his cousins, gun on his hip and bottle in his hand. His erstwhile sidekick, Oscar, was upstairs with one whore or another. It was a busy enough night, most of the seats in the saloon were filled, but it just wasn't the same without music. Across the saloon floor, Tom just sat at his piano, staring at the keys.
Guess he ain't in the mood,
the dealer frowned.
Ain't he been paid to play?
Growled Danny. The dealer opted to ignore the question with a sigh, hoping the topic would be dropped. It would be better if Tom would start playing, but that didn't look likely. Juanita came by to lean on the side of the piano.
She left on the train, she said.
I know,
Tom acknowledged in a soft, wounded voice. He didn't look up.
I didn't think she'd leave before she had the money.
She got it from me.
Oh, I thought you were hoping to leave with her.
Tom just shrugged.
Was. She didn't have enough money to get back to Ireland. I didn't have enough money to go with her. I was close. Showed her the other night. Then we had a fight.
I heard something of that. You shouldn't have said those things,
said the Royale's senior female entertainer. Compassion could be heard in her tone, but it was jaded. Matter of fact, Juanita called things as she saw them.
I was hurt. I was stupid. I knew her better than that.
Gone now, though? You gave it to her to make up for the fight?
She took all my money from my room, Tom mumbled. With what she had, it's enough to get her back to Ireland.
After a moment, he said,
I shouldn't have called her a whore.
She's a whore. We're all whores.
I shouldn't have said it like it's an insult,
he corrected. At that, Juanita inclined her head, nodding like a teacher satisfied with her student. Not as much fun getting by on your back as people like to make it sound.
It's gotta be a hard way to live.
And to lose your husband out here so far from home, have to turn to whoring to get by. Jess, awful. She thought she had something special with you.
I thought so too. I knew what she had to do, I just couldn't stand it anymore. Having to wait, having to be around while she worked. I just snapped, but I didn't think it was such a bad fight.
Juanita shrugged, about to say something else. She never got it out.
Aw, y'all talking about Siobhan? Asked Danny Ambrose.
He came over to the piano, his speech only slightly slurred by drinking, and his posture only a little stooped.
Yeah, she's a beauty. All that curly red hair screams nice, too.
Tom just stared at the piano keys. Juanita turned away to hide her scowl.
I was hoping to fuck her again tonight, Danny mused, but I guess that ain't gonna happen. It's too bad. I figured she'd be a little nicer to me after the lesson I gave her last time. Anyway, hey, piano player, play something for fuck's sake, something cheery. Me and my boy's gonna clean out that mess of Redskins north of here tomorrow. Wanna have a good party tonight before we hit the trail.
He reached out to shove a pair of bills into the breast pocket of Tom's vest. Tom didn't look up.
Yes, sir.
Tom mumbled. He reached without looking for some sheet music.
Y'all need to read music?
Danny asked.
Heard you before. Never saw you need sheets. Hell, everyone says you're the best piano player west of the Mississippi.
I might be a bit out of sorts tonight, sir.
Tom answered.
Gotcha. Everyone's got a bad night now and again. Guess you're broken up about our favorite whore leaving too, huh? Well, I hear you. It's sad for me too. I wanted that tight little asshole again. Maybe I'll just take Juanita tonight instead. Huh, Juanita?
Juanita turned away.
Huh. Anyway, buck up,
Danny said, lightly smacking his hand against Tom's face a couple times.
Play something nice, for fuck's sake.
With that, he roamed back to his table, where his back was to the piano. Tom stopped shuffling the music. He couldn't play anything in a mood like this. It was over. He'd never find Siobhan, not now. Not without any money to follow her, nor any clue where in Ireland she was headed. Surely Siobhan wasn't even her real name. She was smarter than that. But after listening to Danny ramble, Tom forgave her. He understood the pain in her eyes. His jealousy had gotten the better of him. She couldn't make him understand why she had to act the way she did with other men. Danny made him understand, though. Danny also made Tom understand why she stole all of Tom's savings and ran. Tom got it now. He couldn't blame her. Couldn't blame anyone for running away from that. As Juanita said, there wasn't all that much fun in making a living on your back. Tom never figured otherwise. But there was thinking, and then there was understanding. He forgave Siobhan completely, as if there were ever anything to forgive. But he couldn't forgive himself. His feelings all sorted out, Tom rose from the bench. He walked over to the poker table, where Danny and Whitney sat side by side. Tom stood between them. They didn't notice him until he snatched the revolvers from each man's holster. Danny was right-handed, Whitney was a lefty, and without looking, hurled the guns to either side of the saloon. Danny's fell beside the piano. Whitney's crashed into the rack of bottles behind the bar. Tom quickly overturned Danny's chair, sending him tumbling off to his left. Whitney jumped up with that right-handed knife that Tom knew would be coming. Tom grabbed Whitney's wrist, twisted it, and shoved the blade up into Whitney's stomach. He let Whitney collapse with a gasp. Disbelief overrode the alarm in Danny's eyes as he rose.
I am the best piano player in the West, Tom said. I've also been in more bar fights than you've been in bars.
After a few of his punches struck only air, Danny understood that it was no idle boast. Whitney screamed in alarm, calling out for Oscar as Tom dodged one swing after another. Tom stepped over Whitney, backing away from Danny's fists until Danny stumbled over his fallen cousin. Tom caught hold of Danny's collar as he fell. A single punch crushed Danny's nose. He punched relentlessly, pounding blood and teeth out of the face of the notorious gunman. He didn't stop until he had to help Danny stay up. Tom let the outlaw fall back against a chair. Then he went to work with his booted foot on Danny's crotch. He stomped once for every prostitute at the Royale. A bloody stain began to spread at Danny's groin. Satisfied with that, Tom turned Danny's twisted right arm over on the table next to him. He grabbed the nearest bottle, smashed it over Danny's hand, and then stabbed the jagged, broken remains just below the bottle's neck into Danny's palm. The guests and workers of the Royale watched in stunned silence. The only sounds were Danny and Whitney Ambrose's gurgling, anguished screams.
"Hold on, Whitney," someone yelled from upstairs. "I'm coming. I'm coming."
Tom watched the top of the staircase. He grabbed another bottle and waited. When Oscar Jameson appeared in his long johns, rifle in hand, Tom hurled the bottle with enough force and accuracy to smash it straight in Oscar's face. The drunk, surprised gunman lost his balance and came tumbling down the stairs. Oscar lay there for only a second before Tom's booted heel came down on Oscar's right hand with a resounding crunch. The piano player waited out Oscar's howl of pain.
"Done now?"
he asked.
"All right. Take your pick of your friends here to Papa Ambrose. I'll stay with the other."
At that, people began clearing out. They didn't wait for Oscar to get to his feet, to evaluate the damage to his shooting hand, or to see him drag Papa Ambrose's pride and joy out of the bar. He left Whitney behind. Maybe the younger Ambrose cousin would make it. Maybe he wouldn't. Probably not. The last to leave was Juanita, who looked on at Tom in shock. She watched him collect Danny's pistol from behind the bar, check to see that it was loaded, and do the same for Whitney's gun.
"You should probably leave," Tom said.
"They're going to kill you," Juanita breathed.
"Seems likely," Tom shrugged. "Three less of them for anyone else to deal with, though. None of them are going to be gunslinging ever again."
"You don't have to do this."
She was still in awe. The Ambrose boys had roamed all over these parts for months. She didn't think anyone would stand up to them, nor did she blame people for not trying.
"It's done," Tom said sadly. "Head out. Hopefully I'll take out one or two more before it's over."
He didn't have to wait long. With only one lunatic piano player to deal with, Papa Ambrose didn't wait on the whole gang. Only seven of them, plus the injured Oscar, all on horses in the dirty street outside the saloon. Everyone else cleared well out of the way.
"Come on out here, Tommy,"
Papa Ambrose said once everyone had dismounted. With his usual flair for dramatics, he hadn't even drawn a gun. Nobody pointed their rifles toward the saloon, nor were pistols drawn. As Papa told them, this was someone trying to make a stand, some fool making a show of standing up to the bullies. He'd want to be dramatic, too. There'd be words before the shooting. The townsfolk couldn't be allowed to see the Ambrose gang cowed. They waited outside until Tom appeared with Whitney's gun belt around his waist. The gun, as Papa had predicted, still sat in the holster. Papa Ambrose opened his mouth to speak. It was just enough of a delay for Tom to whip up the gun he'd held just behind his leg, to shoot Dick Ambrose. The bullet hit him squarely in the chest. Papa's eldest son was the second fastest draw in the family after Danny. He got one shot off, striking Tom in the chest, but not in time to save himself. More gunfire followed, in their surprise and general lack of sobriety. The Ambrose gang's marksmanship wasn't exactly sharp. Tom, by contrast, concerned himself more with his aim than survival. He got out three more shots. One went wild, but one went straight through Willie Talbot's gut. The other, planted in Chris Fisher's leg, wasn't fatal. The infection that would arise two mornings later finished the job. Tom Graham died on the steps of the Royale, face down and bleeding out from a dozen bullet holes. Papa Ambrose watched him die, just as he'd seen the death of his son, Dick. He would later see Whitney die of his wounds. Danny never fully recovered. There was no one to lynch for it, no one to drag screaming through the streets by horse, no one to make an example of for the town. There were, however, considerably fewer of the Ambrose gang for the local sheriffs to worry about. The gang lost its vaunted fastest draws that night. A week later, men with badges carried out warrants that had waited in desk drawers for months. With the gang's numbers so diminished, there were then even fewer of them around to retaliate against the piecemeal arrests until it was too late. When Dick, Whitney, and the others were buried, only the members of the gang who weren't already in jail showed up. The whole town turned out for Tom Graham's funeral. People came from miles around, right in the view of Papa and Danny Ambrose, to see him laid to rest. His pallbearers included the town marshal, the county sheriff, the mayor, and the town's preacher. Everyone who knew him came, along with dozens who didn't. Everyone except Siobhan. Moans and whimpers from across the room woke him. Alex stirred in the big, luxurious bed. Gentle daylight filled the room, mitigated by an overcast morning sky. Taylor reclined on the couch, her head and arms laid against its plush top. Given the tone of Taylor's voice, Alex had no doubt where the succubus might be or what she was doing. Alex lay in bed, stretching and listening in appreciation. He used to find the sight of Taylor in someone else's arms depressing. He felt differently now. He could watch Taylor and Lorelai together for hours, except he'd never resist the option to join in. Quietly, Alex slipped out of the bed and into the bathroom to freshen up. Taylor didn't notice. She was somewhere north of Cloud Nine. He took care of business quickly, making a point of brushing his teeth to save everyone from his morning breath. When he came back out, nothing had changed. Stepping around the couch, Alex found Lorelai kneeling before Taylor, with her head buried between the brunette's legs. He wondered with a smirk how long it had been since Lorelai came up for air, and if Taylor cared. Probably not, he decided. He doubted she could think of anything at all. Figuring Taylor wouldn't notice him right away, he knelt next to Lorelai, trailing kisses across her back. Lorelai let out a soft purr of acknowledgement, but didn't pull back from Taylor. Alex then shifted up to Taylor, his hands joining with Lorelai's in caressing the younger woman's body. Taylor stirred just enough to encourage more. When Alex came up to kiss her, she kissed back eagerly.
No, not me. Her.
Taylor breathed out finally.
Give her some attention. She won't let me.
Alex pulled away from Taylor to take up a spot on his knees behind Lorelai. Taylor's eyes fluttered open so she could watch Alex join in. Lorelai tensed with anticipation as Alex's hands trailed back over her, caressing her hips and her ass. His fingers soon confirmed that she was more than ready for him. Alex wasted little time. Lorelai let out a moan of approval as he entered her, but she didn't let up on her other partner. Her energy rose, as did the intensity of her kiss between Taylor's legs. The wonderful, lingering torture Taylor enjoyed now shifted. For as Lorelai's excitement grew, her tongue focused on bringing Taylor to orgasm. Treated to such an erotic sight, as well as such expert attention, it wasn't long before Taylor went over the edge. When she calmed, she reached down to draw Lorelai into her arms, holding her fondly, while Alex took her from behind. Satisfied as she was, Taylor relaxed and enjoyed the erotic spectacle. Her partners gave in to primal urges and seemingly boundless energy. Even after last night, she never would have expected such shameless lust out of Alex. What blew Taylor's mind, though, happened as Lorelai's cries of pleasure became even louder, even more compelling, and finally became a single coherent word, over and over again. Master. Spasms and whimpers racked the older woman until she collapsed in Taylor's arms. Alex shifted around, taking up a spot on the couch to gather Lorelai into a tender embrace. Lorelai buried her face in the curve between his neck and his shoulder while she held him tightly. It seemed as if she might be crying as he stroked her hair and tried to calm his breathing.
Thank you, Master, she whispered.
Thank you.
Wide-eyed and amazed, Taylor breathed. Master?
Alex seemed to blush. There are some things we need to tell you, he admitted.
We're not joining your super-secret witches club, so fuck off.
It's not...
He cut himself off, scanning their surroundings in the small bookstore. There weren't exactly a whole lot of other customers, or really any at all.
It's not a witches club, he hissed, and you should be discreet about such things.
Molly glanced over her shoulder at the bald fellow with the naturally sinister, well, creepy and nerdy face. He stood a few inches shorter than her, clad in a black trench coat over an olive drab dress shirt. The guy openly wore a chain with a pentagram and another with an all-seeing eye symbol, and he had an evil eye tattooed on his neck just over his collar. Yet he wanted Molly to be quiet about his club in the middle of an occult bookstore.
This is the third time you've bugged me about this, she said.
You will not get another offer, he pressed.
Yeah, bullshit. We won't get another offer till the next one. Again, fuck off.
You're the one shortchanging yourself. A new order is coming to the city,
the little man pressed.
You can be on the inside, or you can be an outsider when it happens. We are trying to be polite.
Not listening.
Then at least look at this.
He shoved a color printout in front of her. She glanced down at the picture, blinked, and promptly bit her tongue. Molly forced a scowl as she took it.
What is this, a picture from hotchickswithdouchebags.com?
Bring us anything on this guy, or the woman in the sketch, and you'll be rewarded.
Would that get you to go away?
His name is Alex. He may be mundane, but it's possible he's a practitioner. The woman is Lorelei. She's not of this world, he said in a lower voice, spewed forth from the pit.
Something's gonna be spewed forth from my pit all over your snazzy outfit. If you don't back up, you're making me nauseous.
I'm done being patient. You can rule with the rest of us, or you can be food. Your choice.
Food? Oh, fuck. Are you people involved with them? Jesus. You're bigger pansies than I thought. Go away. I don't want anyone to see me talking to you. She turned away from him to look at the bookshelves again.
Fucking cunt, he said,
reaching out to grab her. He suddenly stopped at the loud, low smack of a hand on fabric. He jerked bolt upright with a high-pitched grunt.
Leave us alone, Onyx said, clutching his groin from behind. Or you and all your future offspring get to enjoy a soul-burning case of hereditary herpes.
He grunted again, then nodded. Onyx released him, standing up her full height as he strode away. She walked after him to ensure he left without further trouble. The clerk at the counter hardly looked up from painting his nails.
Sorry I picked such a bad time to go to the bathroom,
Onyx grumbled as she returned to Molly. Then she frowned with concern at the look on Molly's face.
What is it?
When Molly showed her the picture of Alex at the house party and the sketch of the woman Onyx had seen at his home, Onyx gasped.
Their little magic club is looking for them. He said her name's Lorelei and she's from hell, and that Alex might be a practitioner.
Onyx shook her head.
No way, not him. I'm telling you.
I believe you, Molly shrugged. But I imagine this is the woman you saw at his place, right? Wouldn't that confirm what we thought?
Yeah, wow. What the hell is going on with him?
I didn't want to ask Poindexter out there, but clearly something serious. Though why it would involve those butt munches out there is beyond me. Maybe she's an escapee from one of their pervy summoning orgies?
Onyx made a face.
Ugh. You think they really do that?
Probably. You think a guy like that gets laid without using magic? It's either summonings or probably date rape sorcery,
I'd prefer not to think about the latter. It didn't make Onyx feel any better.
This is such a mess. I'm so sorry.
Molly just grinned.
I can think of ways for you to apologize.
I'm serious,
Onyx said, swatting her arm while trying to fight off a smile of her own.
I am too.
If I can get lingerie shows and breakfast in bed every time you get some from a guy, I might have to arrange some regular Friday afternoon action for you. You're a lot of fun when you feel guilty.
You're not gonna let me live this down, are you?
Onyx, I'm trying.
I want you to stop feeling guilty about this. Look, if he's bad news, we'll have to end it. But there's a chance that things are okay. Or, if we can make them okay, I'm not going to go back on what I said last week. Remember the what would we do with a penis conversation?
Molly waited for her to blush.
Hey, I like him too. He seems like a nice guy. I don't want to see him eaten by demons. So let's get our shit together, okay?
After a deep breath, Onyx tilted her head to the bookshelf in front of Molly.
Find what we're looking for?
Yeah,
Molly said as her grin turned to a frown.
I didn't want to pull it down until that tool was gone. Anyway, $70. Think he's worth it?
Onyx's mouth twisted to match Molly's expression. She sighed.
I guess that's my budget for going out for the next couple weeks.
She pulled a large, hard-bound book on demonology from the shelf.
I kinda like staying in with you lately,
Molly said, slipping an arm around Onyx's waist and kissing her lightly on the neck.
Hell, I didn't even want to leave the apartment today.
She pulled the book from Onyx's hands.
Early birthday present. I'm buying.
You sure?
Yeah, but take a look outside while I'm paying up. You've got better eyes.
Onyx strolled over to the front of the store, looking out at Broadway Avenue. The rain had lessened to a steady Seattle drizzle. Traffic was light. There was rarely much activity on Capitol Hill on a wet Sunday morning.
Onyx and Molly both took for granted that most of the hill's denizens were still sleeping off their hangovers.
With the relative lack of human activity, Onyx found it easier to spot the telltale gloom of malevolent intent.
Oh, wow,
Onyx said as Molly got the book rung up by the clerk.
He's out there with friends. I don't think this is just another try at following us home.
She cast a concerned look at Molly.
This is serious.
Molly took a deep breath and let it out. No getting away from this now. She looked at the clerk.
Hey, have you got a back door here? Out to the alley outside?
The clerk looked up from under his dreadlocks evenly, glancing over at Onyx and back again. He shook his head.
Not that I can let you use, sorry. Owner's instructions, doors covered in runes. It's my ass if it gets open and something comes out.
You got roof access at least?
Sure, but I wouldn't try climbing down.
No, I've just gotta call some friends.
Molly nodded.
And could we use the back room for like 10 minutes?
Onyx said, coming over to them.
That depends on what you use it for,
the clerk said.
I heard about the last time you two used it.
Both young women blushed guiltily. Onyx said, trying not to laugh in embarrassment.
Very serious occult business here today, sir. We swear.
Mm-hmm.
Molly nodded, choking down her commentary. The clerk glanced outside again.
He understood the score.
I don't need to know what you're up to.
He shrugged, with a practiced, non-committal tone.
Just remember, this is neutral ground. Whatever you've got going on, save it for the street.
Cruel and bloody vengeance dominated Kenneth's thoughts. His mind only darkened over the 20 minutes he stood behind the van across the street. He smoked a clove cigarette, thinking about all the brutal things he would do to those two bitches once they fell under his thumb. His lord would let Kenneth have them for a few nights before he handed them over. Then again, Lord Stefan might want the goth princess in the lacy black dress. She had something of a classic, delicate beauty, but the redhead was a punk and a dyke to boot. Pretty, but marred enough by tomboyish sensibilities that Stefan wouldn't likely soil himself with her. He'd surely leave her to Kenneth, at least. Why this hadn't been done before now was beyond him. Kenneth understood why the Indians were left alone, particularly given the muscle that their casino revenues could buy. A couple of the pagan circles in the suburbs might be more trouble than they were worth, too. But these two bitches were all on their own. No backup, no coven. Not enough to defend against the Brotherhood of Apollo. Just like the old Russian witch they'd buried in Tukwila last month. The only real question was whether the Brotherhood would make them obedient servants or just break them and dump them in Elliott Bay. Probably the former, ultimately. One simply couldn't waste magical talent, no matter how misplaced. The rain picked up. Kenneth tapped on the window of the van.
Manny, he said. Keep alert. They'll be coming.
Between the rain and the endless line of parked cars along the side of the street, the pair would probably feel they had enough cover to make an unseen getaway. Manny nodded. The driver soon looked to Kenneth with a twirl of his fingers. Showtime. The two walked quickly down Broadway. He wasn't surprised that they might suspect pursuit. What could they do about it? Two hedge witches who talk tough. Hereditary herpes my ass, he thought. Manny started the van. Kenneth walked after them. Soon after that, a man looming in a doorway joined Kenneth in his pursuit. Two others, positioned further ahead, would cut off their escape route. The van could block them in if they got into one of the parked cars. Unsure as he was of which way the bitches would take, Kenneth had placed men down both directions of Broadway. The pair waiting down the opposite way would follow up to ensure no telling evidence was left behind if a struggle occurred. There would be few witnesses on a rainy, empty Sunday morning street. Kenneth strode on, mouthing the words to a sorcerous curse. His fingers twitched and swirled in malevolent patterns at his side. He focused his wrath on the goth princess, keeping his gaze fixed on her right up until the bird shit landed on his face. It happened just as his two minions up beyond the girls had stepped into the open. Kenneth jerked back reflexively, wiping the nasty mess off his face. He looked up to see the edges of the buildings and the telephone lines above him swarming with crows, all staring down at him. A heartbeat later, the murder of crows dove straight for Kenneth. The plan unraveled. Kenneth's partner on the sidewalk yelled out and tried in vain to slap the birds away. There were just too many of them, though, all tearing away with beaks and talons and shocking ferocity. Kenneth tumbled to the ground screaming. Up ahead, one of Kenneth's thugs lunged right for Onyx, only to inexplicably fall flat on his face with an ugly crunch. The other man fared worse. He held a stun gun, but he had nothing that would help him against the alley cat that came from out of nowhere to leap at his crotch with a frightening yowl. Distracting as that was, he never saw Molly's brass knuckles before they landed on his cheek. She laid him out with a single punch. Manny rolled up near the two girls in his van. As the thugs both went down, he saw the first, who had slipped in the rain, catch a brutal kick to the groin from Molly. Onyx simply looked up at Manny and pointed. Panicked, Manny threw the van into reverse and slammed the accelerator to the floor. He got away from the girls and backed up past his boss and all the angry crows. He came to a stop, though, when his van hit the patrol car coming up the street behind him. In his rearview mirror, he saw two cops stare at him. They were both men, both in their 30s. The driver was a white guy with short blonde hair. His partner was black, slightly bigger, and clearly unhappy.
"I swear to fucking God,"
Manny heard the black cop say loudly as he got out of the car.
"This is the third patrol car this year you've totaled."
"How do you figure?"
the white cop snapped back, also stepping out. "He backed into us. You saw it. The whole world saw it."
"Yeah, whatever,"
Tell it to your cat when you get home.
They approached the front of the van. Then the white one stopped, looking around curiously.
Hey, Tyrone, is it just me or do you hear someone groaning in agony?
Taylor only believed their whole crazy story once she was allowed to briefly see the full devil look. All the ruthless sex and cuddling may have affected her judgment, of course. She had no other explanation for why she felt so comfortable knowing Lorelai was some fire-breathing monster from hell. But she was a fire-breathing monster who knew how to make her feel safe. And so did Alex, for that matter. And Lorelai was also a fire-breathing monster who knew her way around Taylor's surprisingly needful body. How the talk about Alex's crazy supernatural relations led to even more sex was something else she couldn't compute. She figured if she wasn't going to run out of the suite screaming, though, she might as well have a good time.
I don't know if I can take any more apology from you two, Taylor sighed, but I don't know if I can move, either.
Lorelai slid and crawled up over her, separated from her now only by a thin sheet from the bed. Taylor lay partially nestled against Alex on her other side, still enjoying his embrace.
You don't have to, Lorelai said, pulling away from her to sit up on her knees.
She looked the younger woman over, with obvious appreciation.
You'll find, though, that your body will handle far more pleasure now than it could before. Consider it another bit of apology.
So is this all you do now? She asked Alex. Sex all day and night?
Not exactly, he replied. We're still working out a happy medium. This is awesome, yeah, but I still want to have a life, too. I don't want to lose my mind over this.
Better not, Taylor smirked. I couldn't sleep with you then.
Is that something you want? Lorelai asked her.
Maybe once in a while, Taylor admitted. I don't know what to say. This is wonderful. You're both wonderful. But what that actually means, I don't know. I'm not in a rational state right now.
She turned her head thoughtfully toward Lorelai.
What do you want?
What I have now. Things that I have longed for all these centuries, all of which I could never have admitted to myself without pain. I have love. I have friends, people who care about me for myself, and not for what power or pleasure I can offer. I need never again lay with someone who deserves only pain and death. For the first time in millennia, I feel like I am something more than sex and manipulation and murder.
Taylor caught the eye contact between Lorelai and Alex as she spoke, and felt somewhat guilty about being between the two of them. Lorelai leaned over Taylor again.
I should also admit that I have more than a little desire for you.
With that, she planted a deep, aggressive kiss upon the younger woman. Then she rose from the bed.
For all my desires, what matters most here this morning is the two of you. I should let you have some time together alone.
Taylor lifted her head, looking from one of them to the other with concern that she couldn't articulate.
I don't have anything to say to one of you, but not the other.
You do. So does Alex. It's natural, Taylor. I'm not worried. You came to the party last night looking for him, not me. He wanted to see you, too.
As she moved off to slip into the bathroom for a shower, Taylor turned toward Alex.
She's really? I feel dumb for asking this, after everything she just said. But is she really okay with this?
Alex laughed before he kissed her.
You're starting to sound like me.
Rachel sat perched on the balcony rail outside the honeymoon suite. The cold rain didn't bother her at all. In fact, it was probably for the best. It kept her from overheating. Watching the suite all through the night and well into the morning left her feeling quite hot indeed. She kept her hands pinned under her butt because she had no idea who might fly past while she tried to relieve the maddening heat between her legs. Mesmerized by the action in her charge's bed, Rachel was a bit startled when she heard the voice behind her ask, "Have you been here watching them all this time?" Rachel yelped, jumping off the rail and whirling around. Floating there, on angelic wings, was Julia, Taylor's guardian angel. Where Rachel looked fairly close to Alex and Taylor's age, Julia looked old enough to be Taylor's mother, her divinely beautiful mother, but older, nonetheless. Age and image were relative things among angels, but the outward appearance of maturity only enhanced the suspicion and disapproval on Julia's face.
Yeah, Rachel said, recovering quickly. I'm like, guarding, like a guardian?
Like a voyeur, Julia said dryly. She folded her arms across her chest.
Call it whatever you want, Rachel shrugged. Point is, I'm on the fucking job.
Julia just shook her head.
Peace. I do not mean to judge you. I am not blind to your predicament, nor do I question your devotion to duty.
Rachel released her hostility.
Thanks,
she said, brushing strands of soaking wet hair from her face.
This does not exactly meet with my favor, though. Has the whore thoroughly corrupted my tailor?
No, Lorelei hasn't done anything that we could act on. And I wouldn't call it corruption, anyway. She doesn't do that anymore, remember?
I have heard your position on her. You'll forgive me if I reserve my judgment for now.
Well, she's about to leave, anyway. Taking off for wherever to give Alex and Taylor some time alone. And he's no corrupter.
I know Alex well. They have been friends for several years. I have seen much more of him than you have.
Rachel smirked, casting a meaningful glance back at the balcony door.
Well, Julia huffed, not like that.
Rachel's expression was unchanged.
They're kinda hot together. He looks better naked than you probably gave him credit for.
Better than Taylor expected. Seems like he can really use what he's got, too. At that, Julia huffed again.
Alex was a fine young man. It was never his physical appearance that kept him from having any chance with Taylor. He lacked self-confidence and wore his heart on his sleeve. He sought happiness from others that he should have been able to find in himself. It puts a girl off, you know.
Rachel's smirk turned to a wider grin.
Doesn't sound like the Alex I know. Maybe this isn't just Lorelei's influence at work alone.
Julia granted Rachel's suggestion a nod.
I'm sure Alex has grown considerably since high school. I imagine his recent trials have also left him feeling more confident.
After a pause, she added,
The Alex that I saw last night was a very different man than the boy I remember.
Trials will do that to a person,
Rachel shrugged. Her smile became sly and mischievous.
You sure you don't want to watch them for a while?
I think not. I have other charges. You have only the one. I came in part to say that you are doing well as a guardian angel. Others had their doubts that a mere messenger could rise to this. But, all things considered, I believe you're handling yourself quite well.
Rachel blinked.
Wow, thanks.
Julia allowed a bit of a smile.
And if the succubus steps an inch outside of her boundaries, I expect you to pitch her into the bay.
With that, Julia soared away on her broad white wings. Rachel let out a long, deep breath.
Finally she's gone, she thought.
The praise meant a lot to her, but so did the naughty show inside.
Thank you for this,
said Alex. He leaned against the wall outside the suite, wrapped in a bathrobe and Lorelei's arms. She wore a casual but flattering blue dress.
No, thank you, Alex. This is lovely. I may develop an addiction to good-hearted people,
Lorelei grinned.
I meant this whole weekend, everything, you.
Reward me by enjoying yourself,
she said, slipping out of their embrace.
Talk, make love, have fun, but don't feel you must make more of this than it is. Your popular culture aggrandizes young love, yet the world is bigger than that. I would not have made a point of
reuniting you with your high school crush, had she not all but literally fallen into your lap the way she did, you both may well be better as intimate friends than lovers.
I'm not looking for that. I've got you. Honestly, I didn't think I'd ever see her after graduation. I was shocked as hell to run into her again.
Lorelai nodded. Consider that she might not have come here had you not already made your peace with losing her.
Are you always going to counsel me on how to handle other women?
He smiled. It serves my purposes. Truth be told, I'm being entirely selfish. Lorelai answered.
Go. Decide where to go from here, or leave it unspoken as you wish. I would be more than happy to be ruthlessly used as a bargaining chip.
The succubus added with a wink. I'll be able to keep myself amused for a while. Alex didn't ask how she'd do that. He simply nodded, said,
I love you,
and went back inside. Taylor stood a short distance away, staring at her naked body in the mirrored closet door. I am fucking hot, she declared in amazement.
I know. Turns out, I've always known.
Alex chuckled.
No, I mean, look at me. I'm really looking at you.
I had a bit of a belly just yesterday. My legs weren't this toned, and my butt was flatter. I've got like a perfect tight bubble butt now. Look at me.
I am. I always thought you were beautiful, Taylor.
Okay, maybe I was cute, but not like this. I could be in movies just because I'm this hot. I wouldn't even have to be able to act.
Glad you're setting your personal standards high there.
God, I'm getting turned on again just looking at myself.
Well then, I'd hate to get between you and you.
Alex smirked. Taylor laughed at his comment and at herself. She finally tore her eyes off the mirror to look at him. I sound stupid, don't I?
I do you. My girlfriend would do you too.
He grew a touch more serious as he added,
I'm glad you came.
Over and over and over, she smirked. Taylor turned from the mirror to Alex, reaching into his bathrobe to explore with her hands. He groaned at her pun.
Yeah, that too.
We've got a lot to talk about, don't we?
We do.
Alex's tongue twitched at the sensations she put him through. His eyes fluttered.
But you're driving me crazy with this.
I can tell, she grinned. So how do you and Lorelai find time to talk about anything? How do you not just have sex all the time?
I thought we were going to talk about us.
Hey, I slept with her too. And might again, from the sound of things. Kinda silly to be shy now. But it's not like I can't see how serious you two are, Taylor said, drawing close enough to him to whisper her words into his ear. So how do you handle the tension? Her hands escalated beyond friendliness.
We, pretty much just give in whenever we feel the need and talk. When we've calmed down.
Taylor shuddered. That sounds awesome. Then she shook herself, firmly closed his robe and stepped back. Wait, no. Talking. Supposed to do talking stuff. She strode over to the table and grabbed the other robe. Though he agreed with her, Alex needed a moment to shake off his rising desires.
Yeah, right. Talking.
He sat down on the foot of the bed. Taylor sat beside him, took a long, happy breath, and then leaned against him. I'm really glad you went shopping for lingerie, she said.
I never even bought any,
he chuckled. I'd be happy to help you on a return trip, sir, Taylor said in her best salesgirl voice, then laughed. Okay, so I like this, us, but I can't do this as a steady thing. Are you okay if we're not a couple?
Yes. Are you?
I'm here, aren't I? She smirked at him suspiciously. Anyway, you.